Welcome to How to Make a Memory, the show that explores the items we make for one another and how they impact our relationships. My name is Jen Tierney, and this week I'm sitting down for a chat with my friend Lisa. I met Lisa about a year ago while I was on the hunt for mom friends to connect with after my second child was born. We both attend a monthly craft night, and our children enjoy playing together during group outings. When Lisa first heard about my podcast, she volunteered herself for an episode, which was such a huge relief to me early on. I was so nervous about gaining support and finding people to be on the show. As you'll learn during the next 30 minutes, Lisa is comfortable with things that other people might be hesitant or nervous about. She's earnest and sincere in a way that I don't see very often. Her offer of participation was touching before we sat down to record, but after hearing her story, I realized that I had stumbled upon something much more special than I had initially anticipated. All right, tell me all about what you make.
So I printed out a couple of my poems that I've written and baking, although I feel as though that's been a lost art since I haven't had time recently. But, you know, it's like a muscle, right? You just have to work it out again.
It's true. So,
yeah. I think that's it for my creative abilities. I wish I could say I was a creative person. I teach, and so that's kind of, I get to have some of my creative outlet there. So I like to think that I'm creative in my lesson planning.
Yeah, I would say that is probably true. I think that it takes a lot of creativity to make a lesson plan and think through how to help children become creative.
It's fun, especially with science. I'm always astounded and amazed at some of the things that my students come up with. So it's fun to see me giving them a prompt or an idea and then where they take it from there.
To get back to poetry, what sort of poetry do you write?
So my favorite poetry to write, I would have to say, is romantic poetry for my husband. I like to write poetry for my parents, my in-laws. They always kind of laugh at me because in the beginning of my husband and I's relationship, I would write these huge, really long cards, just very elaborate, you know, poems and cards to his parents. And they were like, man, are you going to do this every single time? And I was like, I don't know if I could keep the ball rolling forever. But, you know, in the beginning, before we had our daughter, I really enjoyed for Father's Day cards and Mother's Day cards. I enjoyed doing that. And I enjoy using it as an expression, whether it's personal to talk about my own feelings, maybe if no one ever sees it, or as a way to express myself to somebody else, like
sure.
My husband.
Yeah, that's really nice. So would you say have you been writing poems since you were very young, or is this something that you started to do as you got older?
So it's kind of funny that you ask that because I have enjoyed writing since I was little, but it actually started with diary writing. My mom gave me this tiny, cute little diary with a little lock and key when I was about 7 years old. And I still have them, I think. They're in a box somewhere. But I used to love to write about what was happening. And then when I was in middle school and high school, I used it as a way to talk about my crushes, you know, my high school crushes,
of course.
The angst, the puppy love, all of it. And I used my poetry as this kind of secret that I kept to myself. And then when I got older, I thought to myself, you know, maybe I could write poetry for a serious boyfriend that I had at the time. And so I wrote poetry to him and he really liked it. And then it kind of went from there. And so, you know, now that I'm married, my husband gets to enjoy that. And that's something really special that I enjoy doing for him. And for my daughter, as she gets older, I look forward to writing poetry for her.
Yeah. Have you written very much poetry for her so far? Things that she can look back on from, you know, before her memory?
So I only have one poem for her, and it was before she was born. And I just entitled it A Poem for Baby. And it was the only thing I knew about her at the time was just that it was, you know, I was going to have a little girl and we had not chosen a name. There was no idea for a name. So it was just a poem for baby. But I do hope to write more poetry for her. That's something that I do hope to do.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and I can't wait to read it to her when she gets old enough to kind of really understand.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it seems like the kind of thing that would be nice to, like, I know that you love to do scrapbooking, and I feel like you could create something with the poem where you have like a line on each page, or you could, take a piece of art that she creates when she's young and like put that in a frame next to another frame of your poem. Like, there's so many beautiful things that you can do with that piece of art that you've already created.
I think those are great ideas.
Thanks.
I'm like, oh, actually, yeah. I love doing scrapbooks, and during those craft nights, it's fun to work on those and get it closer and closer to finishing and having that be something that I can show her. She, even at 2 and a half, she loves looking at pictures, and she was going through my wedding album the other day, and she goes, "Mommy, read me this story." It would be so nice to have more words to go with all of those pictures that she sees.
What is the most powerful memory you have tied to something that you've created for someone?
I would have to say it's probably either my wedding vows or the poem that I, because we wrote our own vows, or making, or the poetry that I wrote for my daughter. It's so hard to, that's a really good question, because there are so many things that I've written that I love to go back and read it and think about what I was feeling as I was writing it. And it's hard to pick one. I found one recently. It was for our 1 year anniversary, and I think that that was one that really captured my feelings at that time, and all the love that I was feeling in that honeymoon period.
Yeah.
Would be probably one of the more powerful pieces I've written. That and my, I can't read a poem for baby without crying every single
Oh.
time I read it.
Oh, that's really sweet. I think that
Probably is the most powerful, I'd say. Yeah, my
yeah.
daughter, hands down.
Oh. Yeah, I think that once you have children, your brain sort of rewires to make them like of such immense gravity and importance that it's like, oh yes, these other things used to be really important to me, but now they're not. Now it's just this child.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
exactly it. She's like my little son, and I just feel so drawn to her that nothing else really matters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everything matters, but she's the very center.
So you talked about baking. You probably also do a lot of cooking. Is there anything in particular that you really enjoy making in the kitchen?
I would have to say I really enjoy making Bengali food. My husband, he's from Bangladesh, and his mom began teaching me the art of Bengali cooking. And that's something that has been very meaningful to me and really has enriched my life and my cooking. I don't always have time for all of the prep that goes into Bengali cooking, because I think it's just very complex. And especially for some of the more rich, more ghee-filled dishes, it takes a lot of time. There was a goat dish I made once that this goat literally cooked for over 6 hours. It's a whole day process, and you have to keep stirring and stirring and develop some great arm muscle. But
Yeah.
I'm able to take a lot of the spices and a lot of things like cumin, and I'm able to take that and put that into other dishes. And he still really enjoys that.
Yeah, it sounds sort of like necessity of doing like fusion cooking to sort of like take this flavor palette that he's very attached to and sort of transform it into things that are a little bit more schedule friendly as you are such a busy person.
Yes. I'm in my first year teaching. So, first year teaching and then teaching all the science classes. So it's been very busy. So definitely trying to do the more expedited versions of those other recipes. But when I do have the time, I really, really enjoy the longer versions as well. Cooking is such a beautiful art to me. I actually very much enjoy the process.
So, is there any specific dish from your Bengali repertoire that you really connect with? Or can you talk a little bit about what makes the process of cooking Bengali food different from whatever cuisine you're most used to cooking, be it Italian or American or French or whatever?
Absolutely. So, I think I really liked a lot of Italian foods before I met my husband, and I was actually trying to learn how to cook Indian food before I met my husband. I had these Indian cookbooks and I was trying to learn, but I couldn't get it quite right. And the dish that I connect most to, the one that I really love, is chicken biryani. The dish, it's delicious. It's you have to soak the chicken. It has to marinate overnight before you cook it, and it's in this yogurt, lemon, and then there's cumin, lots of other, a little bit of turmeric, but a lot of other different spices. And then what makes it so complex is that there's this whole process, and there's this exact way that you have to add spices as you're sauteing the onions that go in the dish before you cook the chicken. And then when you add the chicken, you have to brown it on both sides. And then you quickly add some of your other stuff. And it all has to be done in certain time periods. Otherwise, it doesn't turn out right. And it's incredible because I've only made this dish a few times. I really enjoy it, but it's very time consuming, so I don't have a lot of time to make it. Not lately, not recently. His mom makes it and it tastes one way, and I will follow her recipe exactly. I mean, I use the exact same amount of rose water. I try to use the exact amount of saffron, and it never tastes the exact same. But I'm sure as I continue working at it, it'll get closer. But it is kind of funny. Things will just taste very different.
Yeah, I think I don't know. That is a really interesting point about food because there are recipes in my family that, we've been making for decades and decades and I mean probably centuries, and there's no person who makes them exactly the same, and they'll follow the same exact recipe, but they always come out like your specific signature is in the food, like your hands.
The love.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like this strange phenomenon of cooking where I think you'd be hard pressed. I guess restaurants do it all the time because they have to have some consistency in the way their dishes taste. But I feel like there's certainly so many examples I can think of times when you'll follow a recipe. I mean, you just look on an online recipe website and you'll see all these people who've rated the dish differently and said, I followed it exactly and it came out like this, and I followed this one exactly and it came out differently. And I think part of that is especially with something as timing driven as the chicken biryani, if you wait just a second or two longer before you throw in your next spice, it could completely change the flavors of the dish. So yeah, I it's interesting that you brought that up as like your favorite dish because I work with a number of people from India and Bangladesh, and just the other week I was like, "What's your favorite thing to eat from your specific cuisine?" And everyone at the table, all like four of them, were like, "Oh, chicken biryani for sure." And I was like, "Really?" So the fact that you just brought it up is like, this must be a great dish. I should make it.
It's a very traditional dish. It's served during all their major holidays, during major get-togethers, during just if you have a major get-together and you're Bangladeshi, you have to have this dish. It's almost like a requirement. It's an unspoken requirement. You have to have this dish, and in order to cook Bengali food well, this is something you have to master. It's one of the it's like cooking Italian, but not knowing how to cook lasagna. This is one of those dishes you have to master.
Huh, that's
Yeah.
really interesting. Yeah.
The only analogy I can come up with. So
Yeah, no, it's a perfect analogy.
it was something stressed to me when I first met him, and I was learning about him and his culture. He was like, "This is the dish. This is the dish." So no pressure.
Yeah, well, yeah, geez. Well, next time we do a craft night, you and I should cook while everybody else like sews and knits and stuff. And we can try this out together because it is something that I really want to make. I make a lot of curries and things like that, and I feel like I've heard so much about this dish that I have to try it.
It's a lot of fun. It's nice to have a fail safe in some recipes that you cook.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you. One of the things that I think in baking, there are few fail safes. If you make a mistake in baking, that's it. It's ruined, like 90% of the time. But with cooking, most recipes out there, I think, unless you overcook the protein
right.
or severely oversalt something,
haven't
we all? I've done both of those things. Yeah. It's much harder to completely make something completely inedible, you know, when you're cooking as opposed to baking. But there are definitely some cuisines, and I think that various Indian and Bangladeshi cuisines definitely are much more finicky and need to be more precise because the spices are so intense that if you just get them a little bit off, then the whole thing either is like so spicy that you sweat through the whole meal or has no flavor at all because you weren't heavy enough with the spices or you put them in at the wrong time and the flavors weren't able to absorb enough. You know, there's like a lot of interesting.
Oh, completely. Yeah. Especially with the chilies that you like, for example, if you put in dry chilies, you can add more of them. But if they're raw chilies, oh, be very careful. And you know, and then, and of course, I'm sure you know this cooking, you know, if you cut the chilies, then you definitely need a lot less of them. Whereas put them in whole, you can put in more. There's all these rules.
Yeah.
So I had to learn those because I learned them very quickly when my first couple dishes, I'm like, oh, that's a little too spicy. Whoops.
Yeah. Well, it's very good of you to take on a cuisine that, you know, wasn't your initial cuisine, because I think that being real brave in the kitchen, especially when you're trying to cook something that someone is very used to, but you are not. Anytime I've ever been asked to make something that someone really loves that I've never made before, I am frozen. I'm like, oh no, they love this thing, so they know how it should taste. They have an expectation, and I don't know if I can deliver on that, specifically because I do not know what good is for this, because I either haven't had it or I haven't had the version of it that they want, you know, so.
There's no point of reference. There's no point.
Yeah.
It too,
exactly.
For you.
And when you're used to, you know, really Western food, I think that when you get into some of those more Eastern foods, it's when I started getting into the non-American version of, you know, Chinese food, Japanese food, Indian food, Thai food. When you start making those yourself and have real traditional versions of them, it's like such a far cry from anything that we do over here that you really have to completely change the tools that you use in the kitchen and the way that you approach the ingredients. And you have to get completely different herbs and spices. And I think that it takes a lot of bravery to venture down a different cuisine path, because it really is like it's learning a brand new thing, like learning a new language. You have, you know, just totally different stuff.
And for me, a big part of it was being okay with failure, being okay with initial failure. I think the only thing that allowed me to become semi-successful, because I definitely cannot say that I have perfected these dishes and I have a long way to go and improving how I cook these things, but I had to be okay with initial failure. And I, you know, I even had to tell the people I was serving it to, hey, this is my first time making this. Go easy on me. You know, I'm joking. Kind of not really.
Yeah.
But I had to be okay with it. And there are things that his mom has shown me more than a couple times. And there are other dishes that I have just never gotten the complete hang of. And maybe I need to see it a couple more times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, practice makes close to perfect, right? So
yeah, and you have like plenty of time to practice, which is nice. Like I mean, plenty of time in the grand scheme of things, not like in your day to day.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think that it's interesting because the two things that that we've spoken about most so far is learning this brand new cuisine that is native to your husband and not to you, and also the creation of poems that you share with other people. And what's striking about both of those things to me is that they're both things that require you to be incredibly vulnerable, because you're giving something to someone else and you don't know how they're going to receive it. When I was young, I remember I was like in love with this guy, like super hard. And he was a couple years older than I was. He was like a senior when I was a sophomore or something. And he went to another school and we were in a we were in a musical together in this like local theater, and he was like the lead dancer and he was super good looking. And somehow I found him helping me with a science project that I had. Like he really loved science and nice. I really didn't love science. And he was like, oh, I'd be happy to help you make this like model of mitochondria. And I was like,
excellent.
Awesome. Yeah. So he came to my house and I was like 15 and googly eyed over this guy. And I had written this, really bad, but really like gut wrenchingly open poem about what his presence in my life at the age of 15 had done to me, you know, like how it just like changed how I viewed men and how I viewed myself. And like, it was just, I must have like, I wrote that poem in like 20 minutes or whatever, you know, cause you're like a feverish, you know, child, like, oh my gosh, I have to get all my thoughts and feelings out on this paper. And then I must have read it like 50 times and I was so proud of it. And I felt like it really like captured my soul and, you know, and then he was in my room and I was just like, it's now or never, Jen, you have to share this with him. So I like took out my poetry journal and put it in his lap and said, please read this. And I just sat there and watched him and was like full of this like anticipation and this like hope that he would be like, I feel the same way about you, and just like grab me in his arms. And but his response was like, you're a child and like you're like a baby, and I think you're very sweet and very cute, but I don't feel this way. And I was just like, oh. And I still have the poem, and every so often I sit down and read it when I really want to have, when, have you ever really needed a good cry, you know, like you just like, I really need a good cry, so I'm gonna go and watch Pay It Forward or something.
Yes. Yeah. So
my version of watching Pay It Forward is to read this poem, because it reminds me of that like horrible moment of rejection and vulnerability and embarrassment. It's just like a little self-flagellation. But I think that what's so wonderful about the stories that you just told is that you find this joy and this love for making something. And in both cases, they're things where you could be like torn down by other human beings, which is yes. like the hardest thing to deal with. You know, it's just so hard to be rejected and to be told that what you did isn't good or isn't good enough. And I feel like that's what's so moving to me and empowering to me about the two things that you decided to talk about.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's everything what you said, it's very true. It is really hard to put a lot of time and effort and love into something. And it's very real and raw to you, just like the poem that you wrote in high school and a lot of the poems that I've written. And have that moment where you hold your breath and you're not sure what someone is going to think. And my husband's quite the food critic, so I still feel that sense of vulnerability even when I make dishes for him now, 4 years and some change into the marriage. So I still have those moments. And even with poetry, with even really close family, you know, it's like exactly like what you said. Yeah, it's just taking that risk and kind of stepping out on that ledge and putting yourself out there. And it's difficult, but I really enjoy it. I derive a lot of self-satisfaction from doing it. And some of my poetry never makes it to anyone else's eyes. And that's poetry that I still derive a lot of self-satisfaction from as well.
Yeah. And it's what you've described in the process of, you know, creating these different things and putting yourself out there and being vulnerable, but finding this sense of like pride and self-worth in that is just one of the most invaluable things for your children, for your daughter to witness and to really like see as this very normal thing that a person who she cares about does. Because being comfortable with vulnerability and failure is such a valuable skill. I like, you're doing her such a great service.
Yeah, I hope she picks up on it. I think it's, rejection's really tough. And I see it with the high school kids that I teach. at that age, they're so afraid of rejection and failure. There's a lot of this instant gratification with social media and Snapchat and, you know, always showing off, but it's not always their most vulnerable side, right? It's, you know, it's easy to do some of the things that don't put you in a position where you're taking any risks. And so I hope my daughter does take risks, and I hope she is fearless in her pursuit of self-awareness and authenticity.
Lisa is an astounding mother. I'm in awe of the example that she is setting for her daughter, not only when it comes to embracing potential failure and rejection, but also in her pursuit of a career that she finds so much passion in. Seeing how she balances vulnerability and strength was very inspiring to me. I hope that I can model this duality for both of my children so that they each feel empowered to be comfortable with both uncertainty and tenacity. And now I'd like to tell you about something I made this week. Yesterday was Halloween, and I've spent the past few weeks making our family's costumes in preparation for a party that we threw this past weekend to coincide with Emma's third birthday. I also made her birthday cake, so it's been a particularly busy and productive time for me. The cake I chose was blueberry and banana flavored, with cream cheese frosting. Emma directed me to dye the frosting blue, and it was a big hit with all of our guests. I will never get tired of watching people enjoy the food I make. Some quick housekeeping. If you have a story that you would like to share, please send me an email at howtomakeamemory@gmail.com. Tell me about something you've made, something that's been made for you, or something you were taught to make. Tell me about how the act of making has impacted your relationships with the people you care about. I'd be honored to hear your story and maybe share it here on the podcast. If you've enjoyed listening to the podcast, please help other people find it. Subscribe through your favorite podcast app, rate and review on iTunes, and share episodes with your friends and family. I don't do any advertising for this show, so your word of mouth is a huge part of how this show is shared with new listeners. Thank you to everyone who helps introduce this podcast to more folks. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. A special thank you to Lisa for joining me and inspiring me to take more risks. Our music is by Chuck Salamone. Our logo is by Becky Carpenter. We get system admin support from Greg Thole. Now, go make something for someone you love.